Well, the summer is over and it's back to work on Capitol Hill. The Senate returned today from their summer recess with a new so-called skinny bill for COVID-19 relief, proposed by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. More on that in a moment. This is Washington Today for Tuesday, September 8th. I'm your host, Greta Brawner. Off of Capitol Hill today, Dr. Anthony Fauci took questions at a Research America event and said a coronavirus vaccine is unlikely to be released before Election Day. President Trump today signed an order in Florida that will expand the moratorium on oil drilling off the Florida coast. And stocks had another down day across the board, with the Dow dropping 631 points, the NASDAQ down 465, and the S&P 500 was down almost 3%. But we begin on Capitol Hill with Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who today unveiled a new coronavirus relief bill. The bill includes a $300 per week federal unemployment benefit through the end of the year, another round of Paycheck Protection Program funding, and a liability protections from coronavirus-related lawsuits. It also includes $105 billion for schools and an additional $16 billion for coronavirus testing. Legislative language would make a Treasury Department loan to the Postal Service, authorized under the CARES Act in March, forgivable. Here's the Majority Leader with more.
Now, here's what our bill is not. It's not a sweeping, multi-trillion-dollar plan to rebuild the entire country in Republicans' image. It does not even contain every single relief policy that Republicans ourselves think would help in the short term. I'm confident the Democrats would feel the same way. But the American people don't need us to keep arguing over what might be perfect. They need us to actually make a law. So Democratic leaders are perfectly free to come out here and keep up their playbook from these past months. Just blast away in bad faith, call names, and complain about the infinite number of things this proposal does not do. Maybe they'll bring back their Goldilocks Act and say our multi-hundred-billion-dollar proposal is too small or too skinny, even though Democrats just passed a piecemeal bill for the Postal Service that ignored everything else. A piecemeal bill for the Postal Service that ignored everything else. Democrats can do all that if they want to, Madam President. I understand they have already been criticizing this bill today before they'd even read it, before it had even been put out. More of this would just reinforce that only one side of the aisle seems to want any bipartisan outcome at all. It's easy to tell in Washington whether somebody's end goal is political posturing or getting an outcome. One way or another, what Democrats do will be revealing. The Senate's going to vote on this targeted proposal. We're going to get the stonewalling of Democratic leaders out from behind closed doors and put this to a vote out here on the floor. And it's going to happen this week. Senators will not be voting on whether this targeted package satisfies every one of their legislative hopes and dreams. That's not what we will do in this chamber. We vote on whether to make laws, whether to forge a compromise, whether to do a lot of good for the country, and keep arguing over the remaining differences later. A few weeks ago, Madam President, more than 100 House Democrats spoke out publicly. They asked Speaker Pelosi to stop stonewalling and let the House vote on targeted COVID relief short of her entire wish list. The Speaker ignored them, ignored her rank and file, just like her piecemeal postal bill ignored American families. Over here, I'll make sure our Democratic colleagues get a chance to walk the walk. Every senator who has said they want a bipartisan outcome for the country will have a chance to vote for everyone to see. Senators will vote this week, and the American people will be watching.
That was Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell from earlier today. Senate Democrats have already declared that the GOP bill is a non-starter, underscoring the difficulties in getting a deal that can pass Congress, earn President Trump's signature, and become law so close to Election Day. Talks between Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, and White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows derailed last month and have made no visible progress since then. Here's Senator Patrick Leahy, Democrat of Vermont, with more.
We know there's a need for another emergency funding bill, the need to address the COVID crisis is clear. This is something actually we could have done in July if we'd been willing to actually do our job and vote on the appropriations bills after the House of Representatives had already shown the way. But 4 weeks ago, the Trump administration and the Senate Republican leadership walked away from the negotiating table. The Democrats had offered compromise. Republicans said, my way or the highway, and left town. Just walked away from the Capitol when we had all these things that needed to be done. And here we are, we're back 4 weeks later. Is the situation better? Of course not. Across the country, families are sending their children back to school without the necessary resources to ensure they're safe. Still more students are learning from home, but often without reliable access to the internet. Evictions are rising. Families are struggling to find childcare. Unemployment is at the highest level I can remember, and certainly unacceptable levels. States are preparing for November's elections without the resources they need to make sure people can safely vote. The Postal Service needs a serious injection of funding to deliver mail in a timely manner. Inaction has consequences. Now, I'm here and ready to negotiate. I was 4 weeks ago. I've been throughout the time the Senate's been out of session. I've been prepared to come back and negotiate. But now we find, no, Republican leadership won't negotiate. Senator McConnell says he's prepared a so-called skinny COVID bill to put before the Senate. But he put it before us on a take it or leave it. No amendments, no debate. Well, this proposal isn't skinny, it's anemic. Why are they afraid to vote? Let's have amendments. Vote them up or down. Is there any question why the American public wonders what's going on when the Republican leadership will not even allow a vote? What are they so afraid of? It's democracy. Vote up or down. Republicans have a majority. If they don't like the amendments to come up, vote them down. But at least vote them. Don't hide behind platitudes, tweets, campaign ads, which you can do because you never actually have to take responsibility. You don't have to vote. Now, the bill hasn't been made public, but details are beginning to emerge. And the details that have emerged show it's woefully inadequate to meet the needs of the country. In fact, it provides even less relief than the smaller $1 trillion package the Trump administration put forward before the Senate adjourned a month ago.
That was Senator Patrick Leahy earlier today on the Senate floor speaking about the Republicans' coronavirus package. Alex Bolton of The Hill joined us earlier today, and I asked him what exactly is in the language.
Well, the legislation includes $300 a week in federal unemployment assistance, so it's about half of what was included in the CARES Act, which was $600 a week in federal unemployment assistance on top of state benefits. In addition, in this bill will be $105 billion to help colleges and schools resume classes. There's $16 billion in money for expanded testing. There is about $190 billion for a second round of the Paycheck Protection Program small business loans. And then there is one of the top priorities of Mitch McConnell's, the Senate Majority Leader, it's a proposal that would shield businesses, nonprofit organizations, schools, hospitals from coronavirus-related litigation unless the lawsuits were based on gross negligence or willful misconduct. So it would set a much higher bar filing any sort of lawsuit related to coronavirus. What's not in the bill, however, is another round of the direct stimulus checks, the $1,200 checks that went out to people making up to $75,000 a year. That was a centerpiece of the CARES Act and a top priority of President Trump's. That is not in the bill, nor is there more money for state and local budget shortfalls, which is a top priority of the Democrats. Chuck Schumer, the Senate Democratic leader, Speaker Nancy Pelosi, they want $915 billion for state and local governments who could be forced to lay off police and other first responders because of budgetary shortfalls. That is not included in this. A smaller win for conservatives, Ted Cruz, according to an aide familiar with negotiations, he got language in the bill to provide tax credits to individuals and businesses that donate to scholarship funds. That's an effort to subsidize private school tuition. One of the controversies that's been raging here on Capitol Hill is, with all this money going to public schools, what are you going to do about the private schools? So there's a win for conservatives on private schools in the bill as drafted, at least according to an aide I just spoke to.
How are Democrats reacting to this Republican bill?
Speaker Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer say it's headed nowhere. They say it does not address the problems. It's too small. They support the $3.4 trillion HEROES Act. In a phone conversation with Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin last week, at the end of August, they were willing to go down to $2.2 trillion. But this is going to cost around $500 billion, so it's well short of what the Democrats are asking for. And so what Pelosi and Schumer said is that this is just a political gesture, nothing more, and that it's, quote, headed nowhere.
When will it have a vote on the floor?
Well, Mitch McConnell spoke on the Senate floor and said there will be a vote on this proposal this week. And when he walked in the Senate this afternoon, he was asked by reporters on timing, whether the vote would be on Thursday. He said, yeah. So it's an indication that Thursday is the day. But his more, extended remarks on the floor only said that the vote would be this week.
Will it pass?
It's not going to pass because it needs 60 votes to pass. And Democrats have said it's headed nowhere, and they're going to block it because it falls short of what they say is needed. But the question, or the big question this week, is whether it will get 51 votes, whether McConnell can get 51 of his 53-member conference to vote for this bill. And that's no small task. I mean, a number of conservatives, Rand Paul, Ron Johnson of Kentucky and Wisconsin, they've raised serious concerns about spending any more money. They say that, you know, there's enough money in the system. But now that the markets are starting to drop, we'll see whether that changes any minds. And I'm talking about the stock markets.
So it's expected to fail. Then what happens?
Well, the point of this is to try to put some, you know, pressure on, you know, Speaker Pelosi and Chuck Schumer to, you know, negotiate. But I'm not sure whether it's really going to do that. These are proposals that are supposed to be, you know, relatively nonpartisan or non-controversial. I mean, I think the main disagreement here is that Democrats just say there should be additional things involved. So the idea is that once this gets, you know, 51 votes, Republicans will have a stronger negotiating position in the weeks ahead. But that really remains to be seen because the Democrats have been very firm in sticking to their position. They say if you're not going to go at least up to $2.2 trillion, we're not interested in having a deal. And, you know, I think what the Democrats feel they have leverage because the 2020 election is shaping up to be a referendum on Donald Trump. And traditionally, the president gets credit and blame for the economy, depending on how the economy is going. So they feel that Trump is going to want to strike a deal on their terms, and they're waiting for him to come around, although I think they're a little bit surprised he hasn't yet.
At the same time, Congress is facing a September 30th deadline for funding. Why? What's happening?
Well, at the end of the fiscal year, you need to fund the federal agencies and departments, and the appropriations bills only go through September 30th, and so you need a what's known as a continuing resolution or a stopgap spending bill to keep the government opened, into October and beyond. And so the good news here is that Pelosi and Mnuchin, they have a deal to do a clean CR, as they call it. They're going to just pass a clean stopgap spending measure so that we don't have a government shutdown on top of the economic crisis and the pandemic we're currently wrestling with. Now, Mnuchin was asked over the weekend, when does the CR go until? He said that detail hasn't been hammered out yet, but he expects it would keep the government funded until the beginning of December.
This is Washington Today, and I'm your host, Greta Brauner. Here are more headlines. The Army's top general defended military leaders on Tuesday after President Donald Trump accused them of going to war to keep defense contractors, quote, happy, saying he and others take the decision to send troops into combat, quote, very, very seriously. Army Chief of Staff General James McConville declined to comment specifically on Trump's remarks to reporters, but defended the Pentagon brass against the accusation that they are beholden to arms manufacturers. In campaign news, a new NBC News Marist poll showed support for the Republican and Democratic tickets evenly split at 48% each among likely voters in the state. Among registered voters, 47% supported Biden's ticket, while 48% supported Trump's, comfortably inside the margin of error. It was recently redone, but the Rose Garden is already under repair just 3 weeks after the unveiling. The garden is experiencing issues with water drainage and some minor complications with updated construction, a source with knowledge of the garden troubles told CNN. New sod is also being laid down. President Donald Trump on Monday held a news conference on the North Portico, an unusual outdoor location, but the source notes hosting press in seats at the Rose Garden, quote, would not be doable in the iconic garden's current status. President Trump has also had to motorcade to Andrews Air Force Base as of late, again preventing media from seeing the construction in the Rose Garden in recent days. Also at the White House today, White House economic advisor Larry Kudlow spoke to reporters about job growth and the state of the economy 55 days before the presidential election.
The economy is coming roaring back. Okay, the jobs number on Friday was spectacular. And I want to add a point. I mentioned this on this hit. We did some numbers this morning. This idea that there are no low-end jobs being created. Okay, so the typical low-wage areas of leisure and hospitality, so read restaurants and hotels, retail trade, read small stores, and healthcare, 7 million of the nearly 11 million jobs created in the last 4 months have been, quote, lower end. The majority of the jobs, just want to make that point because factually it is untrue and it's being spread around and it needs to be challenged. Just like, I will say, when the other team says that the POTUS's tax cuts favored the higher end people, that is simply not true. The biggest wage gains from the tax cuts pre-pandemic were from the middle and lower end of the income spectrum. And once again, the biggest job gains we're seeing are coming from the middle and lower end of the job spectrum.
Larry Kudlow from earlier today. White House coronavirus advisor Dr. Anthony Fauci said Tuesday a coronavirus vaccine probably won't be ready by the U.S. presidential election, even as the Centers for Disease and Prevention asks states to ready distribution facilities by November 1st. At a health conference, Fauci said it's more likely a vaccine will be ready by the end of the year as drug companies Moderna and Pfizer race to complete patient enrollment for their late-stage vaccine trials by the end of September. Here's Dr. Fauci.
Well, right now there are six or seven candidates that the U.S. government is helping to facilitate either by developing with them or by pre-purchasing of doses or allowing our clinical trial network to be available to them. Three of those candidates are already in phase three trial, which means you're going to enroll tens of thousands of people, volunteers, to determine if it's safe and effective. The phase three trials that got started, the first two got started on July 27th. It's a prime and a boost dose. You prime, and then 28 days later, you give a boost. Right now, the trials are about two-thirds enrolled. We project that by the end of September, they will be fully enrolled. Then you add another month, a month and a half to get that second dose. So that's the reason why I have been projecting, Judy, that by the end of the year, by November or December, we will know whether we have a safe and effective vaccine. I feel cautiously optimistic that we will, given the preliminary data that we've seen. And then there are a couple of other vaccines that are going to go into phase three trial at the end of September and then October. So sequentially, you have a lot of the candidates in play, which really is the reason why we're optimistic that we will be successful with one or more, and that will likely start taking place by the end of the calendar year 2020.
But the idea that we're going to have a vaccine by November 3rd, how realistic?
Well, I think that's unlikely. I mean, the only way you can see that scenario come true is if that there are so many infections in the clinical trial sites that you get a efficacy answer sooner than you would have projected. Like I said, it's not impossible, Judy, but it's unlikely that we'll have a definitive answer at that time, more likely by the end of the year.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, if you missed it, you can find the entire event on our website, cspan.org. In more coronavirus news, the top executives of nine drug makers likely to produce the first vaccines against the new coronavirus signed an unprecedented pledge meant to boost public confidence in any approved vaccines. The company said Tuesday that they will stick to the highest ethical and scientific standards in testing and manufacturing and will make the well-being of those getting vaccinated their top priority. In New York, Governor Andrew Cuomo angrily spoke about President Donald Trump for, quote, actively trying to kill New York City, while airing a long list of other grievances about how the Empire State has been treated by the federal government. Governor Cuomo criticized the president for refusing to approve or fund projects that the governor has championed, such as a proposed air train to LaGuardia Airport, the Second Avenue subway line, and failing to provide more federal coronavirus aid for the state and city. Here is Governor Cuomo.
Donald Trump caused the COVID outbreak in New York. Donald Trump caused the COVID outbreak in New York. That is a fact. It's a fact that he admitted, and the CDC admitted, and Fauci admitted. The China virus. It was not the China virus. It was the European virus that came to New York. They missed it. The China virus went to Europe. It got on a plane. It went to Europe. They never even thought of the possibility. And then 3 million Europeans got on the plane and came to New York. And they brought the virus. January, they brought the virus. February, they brought the virus. March, they brought the virus. And in mid-March, the federal government does a travel ban from Europe. Mid-March, too little, too late, Mr. President. He caused the COVID outbreak in New York. Donald Trump and his incompetent CDC and his incompetent NIH and his incompetent Department of Homeland Security.
Governor Cuomo from today. In campaign 2020 news, Marjorie Taylor Greene, a GOP congressional candidate in Georgia with a history of incendiary comments, asserted in a tweet on Tuesday that children should not wear masks, comments in sharp contrast with the recommendation of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and other public health professionals. Greene claimed that masks are, quote, unhealthy for their psychological, emotional, and educational growth, and, quote, forcing boys to wear masks is emasculating. You can find more from this story at CNN.com. The Biden and Trump campaigns have released new ads to begin airing in a number of battleground states. Here are two of them.
Lawless criminals terrorless. Joe Biden takes a knee. The weak response from Biden and radicals like Ilhan Omar has led to chaos and violence. And their calls for defunding police would make it worse. President Trump is making it stop, making crucial federal resources available to protect Minnesota's families. Communities, not criminals. Jobs, not mobs. Strong leadership when America needs it most.
I'm Donald J. Trump, and I approve this mess.
For our seniors, Social Security is a sacred obligation, a sacred promise made. The current president is threatening to break that promise. He's proposing to eliminate a tax that pays for almost half the Social Security without any way of making up for that lost revenue. I will not let that happen. If I'm your president, we're going to protect Social Security and Medicare. You have my word. I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
Nearly a week after Joe Biden's campaign and the Democratic Party announced they had raised $364 million in August, the Trump campaign and Republican Party still haven't released their numbers, and President Trump is talking about putting in his own money. In 2016, the president put in $66 million to fund his campaign, about a fifth of the funds his campaign raised that cycle. From Joint Base Andrews, here's the president before his trip to Florida earlier today.
President, when you talk...
Yeah, if I have to, I would, but we're doing very well. We needed to spend more money up front because of the pandemic and the statements being made by Democrats, which were, again, disinformation. We've done a great job with COVID. We've done a great job with the China virus, a great job. Whether it's ventilators or whether it's vaccines, which you'll be seeing very soon, or therapeutics, we've done a great job. But the press was fake, and we have to spend a lot of money. Now, if we did need, we don't, because we have much more money than we had last time in the going into the last 2 months, I think double and triple. But if we need it anymore, I'd put it up personally, like I did in the primaries last time. In the 2016 primaries, I put up a lot of money. If I have to, I'll do it here. But we don't have to, because we have double and maybe even triple what we had a number of years ago, 4 years ago.
How much are you talking about putting into your campaign?
Whatever it takes. We have to win. This is the most important election in the history of our country. We have a radical left group going around. These people, there's something wrong with them. There really is. There's something wrong with them. And Joe doesn't have the strength. He doesn't have the mental capability to control these people. And you take a look at what's going on. And I looked at Pittsburgh. I looked at Rochester. I looked at L.A. last night. I looked at these Democrat-run cities. Now, you look at Portland every night. They don't have the strength. They don't have I don't think the Democrats have the courage to control these people. They're afraid to even talk about law and order. They can't issue the words law and order. All we want is law and order. And I just put out something. The suburbs are coming big to us because the suburbs are next. If you elected this guy, the suburbs would be overwhelmed with violence and crime. So that's where we are. This is the most important election in the history of our country. So that's it. We'll see you in Florida. Thank you very much.
The president traveling to Florida to announce a decade-long ban on oil drilling off the coast of Florida, Georgia, and South Carolina, a decision that surprised energy industry executives by reversing the administration's earlier pledges to open those waters to exploration. Finally, today, it was on this date in 1974 that then-President Gerald Ford pardoned former President Richard Nixon. President Ford, the first president who came to the office through appointment rather than election, had replaced Spiro Agnew as vice president only 8 months before. In a political scandal independent of the Nixon administration's wrongdoings in the Watergate affair, Agnew had been forced to resign and disgraced after he was charged with income tax evasion and political corruption. Exactly 1 month after Nixon announced his resignation, Ford issued the pardon.
Finally, I feel that Richard Nixon and his loved ones have suffered enough and will continue to suffer no matter what I do, no matter what we as a great and good nation can do together to make his goal of peace come true. Now, therefore, I, Gerald R. Ford, President of the United States, pursuant to the pardon power conferred upon me by Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution, have granted, and by these presents do grant, a full, free, and absolute pardon unto Richard Nixon for all offenses against the United States which he, Richard Nixon, has committed or may have committed or taken part in during the period from July 20, 1969 through August 9, 1974.
Ford left politics after losing the 1976 presidential election to Democrat Jimmy Carter. Ford died on December 26, 2006, at the age of 93. That's it for this edition of Washington Today. If you missed any of this program or want to hear our other podcasts, you can find them wherever you listen to podcasts, or you can find them on our website, cspan.org/podcasts. Thank you, and enjoy your evening.
C-SPAN's Washington Journal, every day. We're taking your calls live on the air, on the news of the day, and discussing policy issues that impact you. Coming up Wednesday morning, National Journal Senate reporter Zach Cohen tells us what's in the Senate Republicans' new scaled-down COVID relief bill. Then Demand Justice co-founder Brian Fallon talks about the progressive group's push for ideological balance to the Supreme Court and federal judiciary. And Heritage Action for America Executive Director Jessica Anderson on their top campaign 2020 issues. Watch C-SPAN's Washington Journal, live at 7 Eastern Wednesday morning. And be sure to join the discussion with your phone calls, Facebook comments, text messages, and tweets.